Hi there, folks, and welcome or welcome back to Nippon Trading International's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis of realestate.jp. He's a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families who are looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for over two decades now. And for about half of that time, he's been buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in Tokyo on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So he's got dedicated loan officers in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions, which means that you're already aware of the fact that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on sales@realestate.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. All right, so for today's episode, again, we've got two back-to-back conversations for you. This first one is a second chat with Jordan and Julita, who you've probably seen or heard here on the podcast a couple of months ago. And we'll link to that episode in the show notes, of course. They've chatted to us back then about their plan to purchase a house in or around Osaka, essentially for investment purposes, although they may want to live in it in the future on a full-time basis as well. And in this second conversation, they wanted to pick our brains a bit more to ask us about our consulting or hand-holding purchase services. How do these work exactly? And also, how does the purchase process work in general? When do viewings, offers to purchase, structural inspections, etc. all happen? So we answer all of those questions. And following that, we do some actual live deal analysis of cheap homes in Osaka. And as we do that, we also discuss townhouses or properties that are joined with or just very close to neighboring homes. What implications do these properties have for buyers and others like them, which may not be rebuildable legally? We also touch a bit about realtors and their commissions. How does that particular ecosystem work here in Japan? So nice little chat on the practicalities of buying an older Japanese house. Have a listen, and I'll see you right after this and right before the second conversation. Stay tuned.
Okay, awesome. So you gave me some sample properties. I gave you a bit of a long read on all of that. Sorry about that.
That's really appreciated, actually.
Yep.
Awesome. Yep. So what are we talking about today?
So for today, so I think it's the same thing. We just want to ask if you can accommodate us or not, because without the yes from that, I don't think we can proceed from using your service.
We can accommodate you again on a consulting basis. So I can introduce you to a friendly Tokyo-based agent, and they will handle the practical side, the logistics of the purchase on your behalf. And I'll come on as consultant for a few hundred bucks just to hold your hand along the way and make sure you're doing everything the right way, not making any mistakes, raising red flags, reviewing documents before you sign them, that kind of thing. So the logistics of the purchase would be exactly the same as if you would have done everything through us. She'll be able to do it with you remotely in English, with English documentation and English conversation all along the way. But instead of it all going through us, it'll go directly between you and her, with me on the sidelines, making sure you're doing things right.
Okay, and the buyer side agent doesn't work for your company, right?
No.
He's independent. Okay.
Yes.
Is she an agent, a real estate agent? Or
yes.
Yes, okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Right, because we just keep on looking at properties, but for us, we're like, we can't put an offer because you've mentioned that you wouldn't be able to accommodate us, but now that you've said that,
And clarify
that there's going to be a buyer side agent, which is still like you, but not you, right?
Yeah, I'll be there every step of the way. It's just that normally with full facilitation, then you just have to make bottom line decisions and we'll do everything on your behalf. You don't need to talk to any third parties and we'll right. sign documents on your behalf, attend meetings on your behalf. That part we're not able to do for the next few months. So the logistics will be done through her and I'll be consulting. But it's not as simple as looking at a property and submitting an offer. So because you're looking... I'm assuming we're looking at vacant properties, or are we only targeting ones where there's already a tenant in there, or what's the plan there?
So we're looking at vacant houses at the moment, which has potential of rental. We're not looking for an IKEA or anywhere countryside.
Yep.
So like what we mentioned, we're looking at somewhere around central Osaka, like an hour away train ride from central Osaka. So yeah.
And we're definitely looking at houses, like a single family.
Yes, correct.
Okay. And the budget is?
The budget is, actually, I've made another list, which is only top three rather than giving you five lists this time. So we've thinned it down a little bit. If you want.
Oh, you're talking about individual properties?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they might turn out to be these, they might fall through, you know, because of some red flags or because the structural inspection will reveal something else. So rather than just, I mean, we can definitely look at individual properties once we start the conversation with the agent, but just give me a rough idea. So you said up to an hour from central Osaka,
yep.
You said single family home. Can you give me a rough budget for the purchase?
So we have three different pricing here. The first one is 8.3. That's our highest.
Yeah,
I've sent it through your IG, so you can open the link as well.
I'm going in there now. Give me a sec. Okay, let me share my screen so I can give you feedback about these on the go. Give me a sec.
That's right. Yeah, that's our top one at the moment.
Yep. That seems to already be gone though.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That was only 16 days on IKEA, I think.
Yeah. If it's a good property, it'll go very, very quickly. Okay, so I'll open the second one.
Yeah, that's why we wanna get
you. You're still seeing my screen?
Yes.
Okay, so these are, just bear in mind, these are within an hour to central Osaka, but they're not in Osaka City itself.
Yes, not in the central. That's an hour at least, maximum an hour of train ride.
Okay, well, when you're looking at other cities, I'd recommend, because you are thinking about tenanting the property until you're ready to move, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Great.
So it would be a good idea to just make sure that let me just open the last population census, just to make sure that the city's population is at least stable, if not rising.
Okay.
Otherwise, if and when it becomes vacant, you could be looking for a tenant for a very long time. So give me 1 second. Just open the latest population census. There we go. Okay. And this city is Neyagawa. Okay. Osaka-fu Neyagawa-shi. Population is in decline though. Just bear in mind, it's gone down more than 1% a year, about 7.7% between 2015 to 2020. It's got a 230 population at the moment. It had 237 and a half back in 2015. So just bear in mind that could be, well, it could be challenging to tenant it if and when it becomes vacant. I mean, it is vacant at the moment. So if and when you're looking for a tenant, it could be just a bit of a longer search. That's all.
Yeah, I don't think that would be an issue for us. I don't think that we are that super eager to have a tenant. If it's going to be vacant, then we're fine with that. As long as we can
use it yourselves.
Settle the property into it. Yeah.
Okay, so that's one of them. 1990. It's a little bit older than I'd prefer, but it's okay. It's doable. Okay, and then the
following your advice of the 1990 max minimum.
Yeah, 30. I like to say 30 years and younger, if possible.
Maybe not for that one.
Maybe not this one.
I'm cheating.
Wow. Okay.
But it's still there. I think I've shown you that so many times already.
Oh, is that the one you showed me before? Okay, sorry, I can't remember. Yeah. Oh, the one without the interior photos. Yeah, I remember now.
That's where the interior, but slightly renovated.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a 1967 house, but it's slightly renovated.
Yeah, I mean, interiors are always quantifiable. We can sort of assume what the interior renovation will cost, which makes me a bit more worried about the exterior. According to the listing, let me just open that, translate that. So the renovation they're speaking of is, oh, they're not even writing anything about the renovation. So we can see from the photos that they've done the inside a bit, but we're not seeing,
they're not stating anything.
Anything, definitely not anything about the exterior.
Yeah, what attracted me with that property is the location. That's just half an hour train ride going to the Dotonbori.
Okay.
Central, and it's only one train ride. Yeah. So I think that's why it's quite pricey, even though it's a 1967 house. But of course, we would like to put an offer.
Well, are they in order of priority? Would you prefer to go for number two before you go for number three, etc.?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
So we're starting, I'm assuming we're starting with this one then, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Are you seeing my screen, by the way?
Yes, we can see.
Okay.
And how would we know if it's still available? Would that be?
Well, normally, if we're still seeing them on the website, they will. I mean, sometimes an agent forgets to remove listings or takes a couple of weeks to remove them. But again, that's what I was saying. Don't get emotionally attached to any of them, because a lot of them will fall through, either because they're not available, because the seller prefers to sell to somebody else, because the structural inspection will reveal something. So if it's not this one, we'll find other ones. The agent will also be able to help you research as well. So once we give them your criteria, they'll be able to also dig up some other potentials for you to look at. And of course, you can keep researching on your own at the same time. So, okay. I mean, it's a good starting point. It's not too old, this one. I'm just a bit not happy with the proximity to the neighbors. I think you're sharing a wall, right? Two walls. Oh, this is like a townhouse situation, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's probably,
maybe that's why that's a little bit lower compared to the other properties that we're looking.
Yeah, it's probably not rebuildable, which again is not a huge issue as long as we keep, you know, a couple of the supporting walls and the foundation. But any kind of work you'll ever do on it, you'll need to coordinate and perhaps compensate the neighbors, because you'll be doing work on walls that are joining with them, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Sorry,
go ahead.
Regarding with the buyer side agent, do we have to pay extra for that, extra fee?
No, so the way it works is, actually, if you would have taken us on for full facilitation, that's where the extra fee would have come in. You would have had to pay us on top of whatever you're paying the agent. The agent is always going to be involved in the sale regardless.
Okay.
The only situation where you might have to pay extra is, number one, if she or we, if it's Osaka, it might be somebody else, but if somebody has to go to the property in person for a viewing, which is always going to be the case with vacant properties, the seller's agent will not accept an offer before somebody views the property. So depending on your preference and on the agent's accommodation, it could be them conducting a remote viewing for us, or it could be somebody here in Japan, myself or the agent or somebody who works for us in around Osaka, whatever we can do to make it the cheapest, will go in person and conduct a remote viewing for you.
Okay.
That's always preferable because the seller's agent might not necessarily, you know, slow the camera down on areas that require more attention. They might skim through some things, but if you want to really save on money, then we can try to convince them to do a remote viewing for us and not have somebody attend in person. So that'll be up to you, but that would be one case where you would have to pay separately. And similarly, if the seller's agent is kind of old school and they ask for somebody to come in person to sign the purchase contract, they don't want to do digital signatures, remote Zoom conversations, then again, there would be trip costs that would apply for somebody to go there.
Okay.
And the third case is if some of the selling agents are a bit greedy in the sense that they don't want to share their commission with the buyer side agent. So the way it works normally is the seller will charge the seller, the buyer will charge the buyer. If there's only one agent involved, then they get to charge both sides. Mm-hmm. And some seller's agent will want to be the only agent involved so that they can charge both sides. So if they refuse to share their commission with the buyer side agent, then you could reach an arrangement with the buyer side agent where you pay her separately, same as you would have done with us if we were facilitating the purchase.
Right.
So it definitely wouldn't cost you more than it would have cost you to hire us to do the full facilitation. And it might cost you the same, or hopefully it might cost you less if the seller's agent is willing to work with the buyer's agent directly. If not, then you'll pay the buyer's agent separately, like it's not going to be a realtor commission, so that they can keep both of those, and you'll pay her something like a consulting fee or documentation fee or whatever she puts on the invoice, but it'll be the same price as another realtor agent.
Okay.
Yeah.
And if we go that route, we have to deal with the buyer's side agent directly, right?
Yes, but not with it. You'll always be working with her. She speaks English. She'll do the documentation in English. Right. You're not going to have to communicate with anyone in Japanese.
Okay.
Yeah. And then my portion is just a 10-hour retainer, which is 55,000 yen. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure about New Zealand. That's like 550 Australian at the moment. That's usually going to suffice for one purchase, unless you're super picky. Then maybe it'll be two of those retainers, but never more than that.
Okay.
All right.
Now, if you've attended any of our recent JREP Summit events in Tokyo or online, you've probably heard our sponsor, Robert Miller from Innovatius.com. He's been in WebDiz Solutions here in Japan for the past 25 years, and he's also an active investor in Japanese real estate property, as well as global online property, which is his specialty and what his company, Innovatius, is all about. They offer a full suite of website services for entrepreneurs and small business owners, including all aspects of web design and management, backup and updates, content formatting and editing, proactive maintenance and error fixing, you name it, with a strong focus on SEO excellence, which is what gets you those hardcore top-of-the-list search engine rankings. But there is a difference. Innovatius works off a simple, all-inclusive monthly subscription model, as opposed to the typical outdated and confusing project model. So you never have to wonder how much any request for any work to be done on your website might cost. It's always $497 per month. And if that's not enough, if you've mentioned you've heard of their services on the Japan Real Estate Podcast, you'll also get 10% off this monthly price for life. Also, and equally important, if not more, you can try out Innovatius for just 1 month, then switch them off, on again later if you want, and so forth. There are no minimum subscription terms. Now, if you're a small business owner, managing and growing a website is super distracting and time-consuming, right? That's exactly where Innovatius comes in. Robert's team takes care of all of that for you so that you can focus on what you do best. So feel free to email Rob on robert@innovatius.com. And his team will conduct a full SEO and website audit on your site, reveal anything that you should address to increase your website's appeal, and provide you with an easy-to-read detailed report with your own branding so that you can make some informed decisions on your online strategy and watch your business grow as you implement it. So once more, robert@innovatius.com. Drop him a line and get your website reviewed today.
And which one comes first, the building inspection or the offer? Like, which one happens first?
So the order will be, we via the buyer's agent, she will contact the seller's agent. She'll say that you're interested in the property. The seller's agent will provide any other information that's not listed in the in the listing itself. So for example, I'm sure one of the first things they'll say is that the property is not rebuildable. Mm-hmm. They haven't written it there, but I'm sure that's the case because it's got adjoining walls and it's very close to the street. He'll tell you if there are any other known issues with the property. Mm-hmm. Then the next step would be to conduct a viewing, whether remote or somebody goes in person.
Okay.
Once that's done, then we'll submit an offer, and on the offer we'll write that it's pending a structural inspection report. And then if the seller accepts your price or negotiates the price with you, then once that's all accepted and moving forward, then we'll schedule the structural inspection report, the structural inspection. And that will cost you, depending on the size and the location and which parts of the property are accessible for the inspectors, but somewhere between 100 to 150,000 yen.
Okay.
So 1,000 to 1,500 Australian.
Okay. So let's talk about something like around where we're looking at. So Osaka, that would cost us 1,000 and...
Between 1,000 to 1,500, depending on the size of the property. That's okay. Not going to include a surface scan of the roof. So that's only going to be the parts of the roof which are viewable from the ground and from the attic space.
Okay.
If we see any signs of a water leak, or they divulge that there has been a water leak or anything that would make us think that it might be a good idea to get a surface inspection of the roof as well, that's about 80,000 yen, so $800 on top.
Okay. Right. But yeah, there's an option to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then once we get the structural inspection report, we're going to review it. If there are no major issues, then we'll tell the seller that we're going ahead, and then we'll go move on to signing the contract, paying a 10% deposit, and eventually settlement, which is when all the rest will be due.
Okay. Right.
Okay.
What else do we need to talk about?
Oh, the post settlement. So since you already clarified that you'll be able to like still take us on board, because initially we thought that you won't be able to do that. So mm-hmm. regarding the post settlement, the
management we can do. That's not a problem. That we can do at any time.
Okay, yes. All
right. Because our plan would be, we'll go to Japan. We will live in that property for a month or so. And then we go back to Australia, and then we'll ask you to if you can manage our property by that time.
Well, when you arrive at the property, I'm assuming you'll want your utilities connected. So we'll probably start a bit earlier than that.
We need like power and water.
Yeah, you've mentioned that you're planning to come here in August. And again, let me emphasize that I don't think you'll be done with all of that by August. And even if you are done with the settlement, the utility connections takes another month or so after that. So don't assume you'll be able to live in the property in August, even if it does end up being this one, which we're still not sure about.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, as long as, yeah, for sure. That's okay. So as long as we can keep the ball rolling, I think we're happy to proceed.
Then... No problems. So do you have the easiest way for me to jump in with feedback at any point along the way is in a chat group, either online or WhatsApp. Do you have any of those two?
Yeah, we have
WhatsApp. Or Messenger if you prefer. WhatsApp, yeah. So WhatsApp. I'll write down in Insta, I'll give you my mobile number now, and you can add me to WhatsApp, and then I'll kick off a chat group with Mika-san, with the agent that I'm going to refer you to.
Okay, let me just open my WhatsApp.
Okay. That's my number there. So just send me like a hello or emoji or something, and then I'll kick off the chat group.
You have it here, right?
Yeah.
There's no rush. You can do that later.
Yep. Anything else that we need to tackle?
So basically, we will try to start with this property already, the number two. But if that one doesn't push through, then obviously we will just keep on looking and then submitting the list to you.
And yes. Well, I mean, there's going to be a chat group for the three of us, including the agent. So you can send listings over there. If she finds anything for you, she'll put them in the chat group, and then we'll have a discussion about each and every listing. I'd rather we don't go for the 1968, but if you insist, we can continue on to that one too.
Okay.
Okay. All right. 1967, 68. Okay. Is this you, the one wearing suit?
Hmm?
On WhatsApp, your profile photo.
That's it. Yep. Just got it. Yep. Excellent. So I'll need my phone to add you to my contacts, and then I'll kick off a chat group with her.
Okay.
Okay.
Cool. And
oh, by the way, regarding like the retaining fee, because we're already starting this one, when are we need to like settle the payment for the retaining fee?
So I need to be paid in advance. The agent and everything else involved in the purchase comes later.
Okay.
But I'm not going to delay. I'll start the chat group with the agent, and I'll also send you an invoice and just settle it whenever you can.
Okay. And regarding with the deposit, how much percentage do we have to put, like,
if say 10% when we sign the purchase contract, which is going to be after the offer is accepted and after the structural inspection report and all of that, we pay a 10% deposit. But before that, you'll need to pay for the inspection as well. So that's put in your mind, maybe, let's say 3-4 weeks down the track, you'll need to pay another 100,000 to 150,000 yen.
Okay. And the 10%, that's fixed. We wouldn't be able to do lower than that or higher than that. Is that right?
No, that's usually what it is, 10%. I mean, they might round it up to the nearest 1,000 kind of thing, but not beyond that.
Mm,
okay. Awesome. Mm. Else, I think
that's it. We just wanted to like really confirm that we can do this with you.
No, we can do. I've been doing it because since about the end of last year, we've been swamped with customers, and I haven't been able to fully onboard anyone. So I've put this process in place to make it as close as possible to the real purchase facilitation process with me consulting. So I've already done this with about a dozen clients so far, and it's working well. Don't worry.
Okay.
Yeah,
because our situation at the moment, we just want to share it with you. We've already sold our house here in New Zealand. So
oh, done. Congratulations.
We're now more confident to like really proceed with this buying a property in Japan.
Good stuff. Did you get the price you wanted for it?
Yes. Yeah.
Close to it. Okay.
All right. So for the second call, this one is audio only, but super thorough and detailed. We talked to a first-time buyer who's wondering about the differences between long or standard rental leases versus short and medium-term rentals, as well as what are the actual purchase and sale costs when transacting on a Japanese real estate property. She also wonders how profitable exactly are Japanese real estate property investments, considering the rapidly depreciating structures and the potential for declining property values as a result. What determines the resale price, she's wondering, for investment properties as opposed to owner-occupied properties? What should the right age be for investment properties in order to maximize yields? And what are the best asset classes for various budgets? We then also talk locations, which areas in Japan offer the most attractive investments and why, and how do we actually analyze and decide which property investments are attractive as opposed to others? We then talk about a little bit about structural inspections. When are those recommended? Should we aim for different property profiles based on the types of rental leases we're planning to be dealing with? And who are the typical tenants and guests for each rental type? The differences between aparto and mansions. And if you don't know these terms, listen closely. This is important stuff in Japan. What kinds of yields can be expected in various locations and different rental lease types? Is it feasible at all to rent out a property when it's not in use? And do these kinds of properties make for good investments? We then segue a little bit and talk about how to manage exchange rates. When is a good time to remit funds to and from Japan? When should investors bring their income back home? And what's the best way to avoid losing money on exchange rate fluctuations and swings? And finally, how to search for properties, where to find statistics on prices, trends, and so forth. Okay, yes, I am with you. So I read through your email again. We were talking about long-term versus short-term versus medium-term, right?
Correct.
Yep. So what is there a particular question that you want me to answer for you?
Cost, right? based on when you sell the house, you pay fees related to the selling of the home, and then because the property doesn't really appreciate, a lot of times it may depreciate and you may need to spend money to kind of renovate a little bit before you can sell it. So all that cost, once you kind of add all those costs into it, it doesn't, I mean, the number, it doesn't look like it, it makes sense.
Well,
the day, I don't really have any net earnings yet.
So the sale costs are not correct. The 15% is purchase costs, but on sale, the only person you need to pay is either a real estate agent or somebody else who facilitates the sales like ourselves. So sale costs are more around 5%, not 15.
Okay.
Because legal and registration is going to be on the buyer, not on the seller.
I see. Okay.
And renovation-wise, if it's an investment property, the renovation that you do between tenants is kind of sufficient anyway, and that's part of your normal running costs. And also, you will probably, if you want to get maximum bang for your buck, you'll probably be selling it with a tenant already in it.
Okay.
In which case, there's no renovation at all. So the way it works is the investment properties are very much properties that are strictly investment, meaning the tenant who lives in them will never be able to afford to buy them, and the people who can afford to buy them would never want to live in them. So they're going to be priced strictly based on the yield that they command. And if you've bought in a good location, and we're assuming you bought in a good location, otherwise you'd be making maybe more than 5% on purchase. But if you buy in a good location, which yes, would be about 5% return, then that location, I mean, people would be used to getting lower yield in that location as it improves over time. So it's not only a matter of whether the property will gain in value or not, it's also a matter of what yield would be acceptable to buyers. So, for example, when we started working, a lot of places that we were operating in were 8, 9, 10, 11%. These days, when we sell properties in these locations, investors are assuming they're going to be getting that 5%. So we can raise the price of the property if the acceptable norm in that location is now lower yield.
Right.
But it is 5%, yes.
Okay.
It is 5%. So
okay.
After 10 years, you will have whatever you gained in rental income until that point, 10 years or 5 years or 7 years, whatever the case may be. Plus, hopefully, your capital back, maybe a little bit less, a little bit more, but around the same capital. Having said that, last 15 years in big cities have been very good in Japan, so we have been selling at a profit. But I wouldn't be banking on it because that's on the back of 25 years of deflation prior to that, right?
Right. I have heard and read that probably in Tokyo you see appreciation, but elsewhere.
No, all big cities. No, not. All big cities in Japan all big cities in Japan have gone up in the last 15 years. Tokyo, Osaka, and Fukuoka have been going up the sharpest. But all big cities have been gaining in value. And in the last year or so, even rural prefectures have been gaining in value, which is the first time in a long time. But again, I wouldn't bank on it, just to say that you'll definitely be retaining your value, if not gaining a bit.
Right, okay.
And in Tokyo, you wouldn't get 5%. In Tokyo, you'd get more like 3, 4% at best. Other cities, maybe 5, 6.
Hey, you purchase a condo unit, maybe the unit 10 to 20 years old, and then you rent it for, say, 10 years, and then you exit that. You sell it. Is that like the sweet spot?
I'd say more like 20 to 30 years and then sell it just before it hits 40 years, because 10 to 20 years, they would cost more and your yield would be lower. So more like 20 to 30, and it depends on your budget. If your budget allows for it, then the ideal property would be a small building of, let's say, for 300,000-400,000 US. Then you'd get, you'd also have a large land plot, which stands to gain more in value.
Right.
Plus, you'd have more flexibility with what kind of rentals you want to do, which you're not going to have that much in an owner union situation.
And that's what I have in mind as well. So, for example, at the $300K US, where can you get a 3-4 unit small building like that? Is it like Yokohama? Is it Fukuoka? Probably not near Tokyo, right?
Near Tokyo, as far as Chiba, Saitama, Yokohama go. Definitely Fukuoka. In some cases, maybe the outskirts of Osaka, but all suburban locations in all big cities except Tokyo, big and medium cities, all suburban locations in those cities would have buildings at this price level. That would be, and because it's a wooden structure, then yes, we would go for under 20 years old, as opposed to condo units, which are concrete, in which case we're okay with up to 30. But that's going to be a wooden or steel framed wood structure. So yes, under 20 years old would be best. And suburban in all of these locations at the moment would get it for you. So if we're talking, let me just, because the rates are going crazy, which is amazing. So let's say roughly 45 million yen, which is, let's say 40 to 50, but let's call it 45 million yen, which is what we normally see these buildings go for in US dollars. That is at the moment 286, actually.
Yeah, that's definitely doable. And so I guess in your experience, you know, with that kind of budget, you can find is it typically like 3 or 4 units building, and then you would, do you believe like one location is better? Sorry, not location, I guess, city-wise, right? Is it Yokohama? Is it Fukuoka? Is it just personal preference, or do you think which area has more potential?
I guess Fukuoka has the most room to grow and has been growing as sharply as Tokyo and Osaka. It just started a lot lower, so we've still got a lot more room to grow here. But the rest of them are absolutely fine. I would go on a deal-by-deal basis rather than focus on a particular location. So as long as the city is medium to large and has at least stable or growing population, and then that's attractive enough for me, and then I go on a deal-by-deal basis.
I see. Okay.
And it's going to be more like 4 to 12 units, not 3 to 4.
Oh, wow. 4 to 12.
Yeah. We've got customers with 4, 6, 8, all the way up to 12 at the moment, at this budget.
We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, if that's still a thing, or if you just need somewhere quiet to get away from the world. They offer a variety of options for families, corporate relocations, or even if you're simply transitioning between homes in Tokyo. The properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They come with fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens. And they're just a delight to stay in, fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know they're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own, but longer term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly in a Japanese business hotel. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, etc., you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profit, or a holiday home that you want to rent out when you're not using it via short-term stays, drop them a line today, see how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth a visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at sales@realestate.jp. And now, back to the podcast.
Okay, so I guess then, so if I decided, hey, let's do this, then is it, I think I heard from your other podcast that, you know, I sign a contract with you, I pay a portion of your fee, and then do you then contact your real estate agent? If we're like casting the net pretty wide here, you know, it could be Yokohama, it could be Fukuoka, then you just contact your real estate agent and say, hey, this is the criteria, this is what we're looking for, and then do you then wait for them to kind of feed you whatever they believe are good deals, and then once you receive the information from them, do you then translate and send it to me to see how the operation logistics goes here?
So normally it would be a mix of us contacting agents that we've worked with, yes, but also researching online, because if there's anything available that's not coming from those agents, we're comfortable enough to be able to evaluate deals. We've been doing it for a while, so we don't have to stick to those particular agents. And then we will be providing you deal analysis spreadsheets in English, of course, and showing you what the property looks like, what we think the income would look like, expenses and so forth, advantages, disadvantages, features, tenant role, renovation history. There's not going to be much of a renovation history if it's under 20 years old, but at least in what condition it currently is. And then we will be facilitating the entire purchase on your behalf. So you need to make kind of bottom line decisions, and we'll handle everything else on this end.
Yeah. Right. And so, of course, you recommend like home inspections to see any kind of structural issues, all that.
Under 20, unless there's, the seller and the listing agent have to report any potential damages that happened over those 20 years, but under 20, you can probably skip the inspection if you want. It's always a good idea, but not necessary. There's not going to be that much potential damage to a building that young. That's why we aim for that age and younger. But if you can afford it, then yes, I'd definitely go for a structural inspection if you want to.
Okay. And then, so then you have people working for you or with all the knowledge about like different areas, because we're talking about like different parts of Japan, right? So it could be Osaka, it could be Fukuoka, it could be Yokohama, it could be even outskirts of Tokyo. So then you have people who are pretty familiar with the area, what information do you rely on for the analysis?
We do have property managers and real estate agents that we work with in all of those cities who are very local. But again, we've been doing this for about 13 years. We're pretty familiar with the cities ourselves at this stage.
Okay. I guess it's smaller than I imagine. I mean, I've been to Japan a few times, but definitely not, you know, kind of, I wouldn't call myself, I know the area or any area, just, you know. But anyway, okay, sounds good. Let's see, what other questions I have? Oh, so going back, I don't think I'm thinking about short term, but I do want to learn a little bit about medium term, since you brought it up in the email, the monthly rental.
So medium term has the potential of giving you a higher yield. With medium term, though, the property managers that rent them out are specialized companies that do medium term. So in that case, we'll have to more carefully select the property manager who's going to be managing the building and ask them if they can do medium term or a mix of long term and medium term as we decide. And that does have the potential. But then you have more duty of care. So you need to furnish the apartment. You need to make sure that everything's in tip top working order. replenish utensils and bed linen and stuff like that, not on a daily basis like with the short-term stays, but every time a tenant checks in or checks out, or if someone's there for a few months and they let you know that something's broken or needs refreshal, then we need to provide that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but you have a contact to take care of all that.
We do, and in cities where our contacts haven't performed well, we'll research and replace them. A large part of our work is to monitor the property managers, and if they're not doing a good job, find a new one.
Okay. And then I guess, does it necessarily mean that, hey, if we're doing medium term, then you're kind of looking at more of porcelain area or not necessary?
Convenient area. Your medium-term clients, some of them will be foreigners, but a lot of them will be, I'd say the majority of them would be domestic Japanese relocating for a work project or staying a few months with elderly parents or attending a university semester or something of that sort. So they're not necessarily going to be foreigners, but some of them will definitely be. People who come here for 6 to 12 months to study something, or again, a relocation project where they're assigned to the Japanese office of a foreign company. So we would occasionally have them, but the property manager's job is to find the largest pool of tenants that they can and place them. The advantage with short-term is we can always easily switch back to long-term. So if we see that we're not getting good occupancy rates, then we can always just rent it out normally. It's a normal rental legally. There's no licensing or compliance required. We just need to find a property manager who can handle it.
Okay, gotcha. No special licensing. Okay. And then does it mean is going to be, the property is going to be like a single individual house? Like did you guys call it mansion? Is that what it's called?
Mansion are more the big concrete buildings, the small multi-unit apartment, the 2-3 floors multi-unit apartments that are made of wood. They're called apato in Japan, like apartment building.
Apato.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm assuming that's what we're going. But were you thinking about a house or about one of these?
House. Yeah, house.
A house, like a single family home?
Right, like a single family home with that. So that will be more of like a candidate for short-term rental, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't advise, unless you're planning on running an actual hospitality business, short-term rental, Airbnb, I wouldn't go for a house because number one, they're not really built to last in Japan. They tend to deteriorate rather quickly when they hit about 25, 30 years of age. And also, you don't get the multiple income streams that you'd get with a larger number of doors, right?
Okay. So then, I was thinking about, hey, doing the 4 to 12 unit ones that we talk about, or I was actually thinking about doing the single family, where, you know, if there is a family of four, or, you know, an actual family, not a single tenant, but a family tenant, then you can find them on, and you said before that they are more of a long-term tenant, they can stay in there for 10 years and all that. However, what you're saying is the structure, the property itself would deteriorate,
It would come with a lot more maintenance. Yeah, it would come with a lot more maintenance. And because it's not the owner union building situation, all the structural maintenance is going to be on you. There's no reserve fund being collected to handle that. So if you prefer a family-sized long-term tenant, I'd maybe get a family-sized condo unit, mansion, rather than a house.
Okay.
I mean, the house does come with the advantage of the larger land plot, similar to a small building.
Right.
But if you want the larger land plot, I'd maybe go for a small building. They're built a lot sturdier and they're giving you multiple and more diverse income streams as opposed to a single tenant with a house. And also, they wouldn't require as much maintenance.
Okay.
I mean, a house is an option if you want to buy it close to brand new and then you've got close to 20 years before you need to worry about maintenance. But I'm not sure. The yield would be very low. So you'd be buying a house for like $300,000-$700,000 if it's in a good location. And then the yield would be, again, more like 3-4%, not like the 5-6.5% that you'd get with a small building.
Okay. So I watched a few of those YouTube videos. There's a lot of talk about Japanese Akiya, and not necessarily in the kind of in the countryside, but there are, and I don't know if Akiya is the right term, but there are like
in the cities as well. Yeah, still Akiya.
It's still Akiya, right? So it's empty home. Somebody already left, right?
Yeah.
But it could be in the outskirts of Tokyo. And of course, the price will be like, you know, US dollar wise, it could be like, you know, 200,000 or something like that.
Yep.
And wouldn't that, you still don't recommend that if it's like in the outskirts of Tokyo, kind of, I don't know, 20-30 minute commute into Tokyo or whatever?
If you want to be running a hospitality business, definitely. If you want to rent them out medium or long term, I wouldn't, because the yield would be pretty low on these and they would require a lot more maintenance and renovation. So to rent them out for medium term, you'd need to renovate them to modern, livable, comfortable standards, because the people who rent those by the month are expecting a higher level than just a normal long term tenant. And if you do rent them long term, which means you don't have to renovate them that much, the yield would be very, very low. So unless you're planning to run a full-on, hands-on hospitality business, check-ins, check-outs, get the license, hotel license, or minpaku license, whatever the case may be, I wouldn't advise to go for a single-family home, no.
Okay. So, but that could be that you may suggest that if it's for self-use, like if I were to have a second home in Japan.
Oh, and then that just rent it out when you're not there kind of thing? Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, say that again?
You mean have a holiday home and then try to rent it out when you're not using it?
Yes. But that will require special licensing, like you said, it'll be a short term, right?
Yeah, that can be done, but that's not an investment. You're going to be covering the cost, maybe a little bit of extra pocket money at best.
Okay, gotcha.
I mean, it'll pay for your trip, but not much beyond that.
Okay. One of the podcasts that I heard you talking about, there is, so I guess going back to the logistics of purchasing, since I won't have a Japanese bank, which app or company did you say was best to kind of wire the money over from US to Japan?
For smaller amounts under ~1,000,000, I'd use Wise.
Wise, right?
I'll send you referral links for both of them. If you use those, then we'll both get some bonuses. And the other one that I'd use for bigger transfers, like the actual purchase itself, is called OFX.
Okay.
The rates are similar. Wise is maybe a little bit better. The advantage of Wise is that it's a domestic remittance, so there's no receiving bank charges on the other end. OFX is an international remittance, so there's going to be somewhere between $20 to $40 receiving bank charges. So I'd only use them for bigger transfers. But they come, especially if you use our referral link, they come with a dedicated account manager
that you can always speak to the same person if you need to ask a question or confirm something or make things smooth. With Wise, if anything's an issue, you need to meet a deadline and the money didn't go through yet and you're wondering what's happening, you only get call center bots kind of thing. So for an actual property transaction, I'd go with OFX. They're a lot more professional. Now, here's some big news for anyone interested in Akiya, the abandoned vacant homes that are abundant all around Japan for very attractive purchase prices. Akiya Mart, our latest sponsor, is a recently founded online search and discovery tool for Japanese real estate. Its user interface will be very familiar to users of Zillow or Redfin. The platform essentially scouts the internet for property listings, translates them into English, and displays prices in US dollars, all in one place and with a dynamic map interface that makes browsing, finding, and shortlisting your favorite properties a piece of cake. Which any of you have been struggling with the dozens, if not hundreds, of Japanese property websites that are available online and their very clunky interface will probably find a real blessing. They've got already over 500,000 listings on the platform, and the database is expanding daily. Ranging from abandoned rural homes to luxury urban properties, Akiya Mart makes it easy to find your dream home in Japan, regardless of your budget. Now, while the platform is essentially free for use, here's an exclusive offer for listeners of the podcast. You can use the promo code NTI to receive $5 off Akiya Mart Pro. The subscription will unlock a bunch of very attractive features for you, including unrestricted access to the entire nationwide property database and a whole range of filters, which will help power charge your search for that elusive perfect home and make it even easier. So hop over to akiya-mart.com. That's AKIYA-MART, akiya-mart.com, and kick off your search today.
Yep, got it. And so... once the home is purchased and started receiving rent, your company then takes care of everything from receiving the rent, pay out all the expenses, and then the residuals stay in your bank. How often do you disperse out to the owner in the U.S.?
That's totally up to you. It's an international transfer again, so I wouldn't do it every month because that would eat significantly into the amount that you... But it's up to you. What we advise people to do is, rather than depend on the money for anything they need to do back home, like a payment of mortgages or life expenses, and rather than decide that we're going to transfer once a year, it's a lot better to just watch the rates and transfer your income back when they swing the other way so that you're making an extra little buck on the transfer itself rather than being stung by the rates.
Okay.
For example, I'll give you an example. We have cash reserves in three different countries, three different currencies, right? We've got Euro, Australian dollar, and Japanese yen, personally. Rather than lock the money in a term deposit account where we'd make, I don't know, 2, 3, 4% on it, if we just watch the rates and then just transfer funds across whenever they swing this way or the other, that makes for occasional 10% hikes, right? So if the dollar to yen rate suddenly drops from 150 to, I don't know, 135, which can happen fairly frequently, then we've made 10% or maybe even 20%, depending on which way we're transferring it. So it's a good idea to withdraw your income when it's in your favor rather than because you need it for something.
Okay. So then I guess you don't have separate accounts for each company or each unit, each property.
We can't. We're not allowed to open those now. No. We provide an annual statement, so we've got a bookkeeper who sits on top of all the income and expenses coming in and coming out, and we put them in individual Excel sheets that are annual statements. We send that to you once a year, and you tell us when you want your money back. But if the rate swung in your favor and it's the middle of the year and we haven't got an updated statement for you, we can run a rough approximation and send to you based on that. We're not concerned if we overshoot because we can recoup it from your future rental income. So from our perspective, it's fine whenever you want the money.
Gotcha. Okay, gotcha. So when the exchange rate is to my favor, I can say, hey, I like to get a disbursement, and then, you know, just wire it over and I'll just pay whatever fee that wire fee is.
Correct.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah.
Or if you're physically in Japan and you want cash here, then we can send cash from your account to your hotel, wherever you're staying, etc. or the house that the house is available for.
Yeah, that's definitely, that's cool. Yeah.
It's handy, yeah.
That's definitely an option.
But if you, by the way, if you sign up with if you sign up with Wise, they've also got a multi-currency account which can hold up to 1,000,000 yen for you. So that tends to cover trip expenses as well, and it comes with a debit card.
Yes, I've heard. Yeah, I don't have an account yet, so we'll look into it. Okay.
I mean, it's free to sign up with. It's free to sign up with both of them. So I'll send you the referral links and sign up with them, and then you can compare the rates and whenever you want, load it up.
Yes.
Fukuoka is kind of similar to Osaka. So we get, in a good location in the city, we get up to 5, maybe 6% for a building. Individual units, more like 5, 5.5% if we're lucky. Yokohama, Chiba, Saitama, Kobe can creep up to maybe 6.5-ish. Nagoya as well. Sapporo can go up to 6, 6.5, but Sapporo, the winters take a toll on maintenance and vacancy expenses. So Sapporo is probably, on average, we'd aim for a higher yield on purchase because we want to factor that in.
Okay.
And other, I mean, there are prefectural capitals and satellite cities, like the biggest city in an otherwise rural area, bedroom community, satellite city that's, let's say, within an hour to any of the major cities, those can go up to maybe 7%, but they have much less potential capital growth appreciation potential and also slightly more problematic tenant base. So I would maybe focus, when you're starting your portfolio, I'd maybe focus on more safe and stable for most of it, and then depending on your risk appetite, maybe 20-30% you can go for a few more adventurous locations.
Recommend locations that are maybe like 30 minutes train ride into the center of the city, and then the property should be within 10 minutes of walking distance to the train station.
Basically, yes. I would say, depending on the city, maybe up to 45 minutes would be okay. Like if it's Tokyo or Osaka, then maybe up to 45 minutes is still okay, as long as it's convenient commute. And if the station, the nearest station is a major one, like Hakata Station or Tokyo Station or Osaka Station, then maybe 15 minutes walk is also okay. But otherwise, yes, within 30 to 45 minutes, within 10 to 15 minutes to a station, depending on the station.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Understood. And so when you then send me, you know, after you did all your analysis, you send it to me, the listing. Is there like any kind of website you recommend me to kind of do some research? I mean, other than, hey, check out the area, check out the city. Other than that, is there any kind of website to, there's really not much to look into, because you guys would have done all the work, right? The most that I would need to do would be, hey, check out the location and the surrounding areas, what it has, and the, you know, all the train stations and all that, right?
Yeah, I mean, the only website that I know that can give you good information that you can check in English is Akia Mart. Are you familiar with that one?
I actually heard that over, from one of your podcasts. Yeah,
Akia-mart. So, the free version just lets you see houses up to $20,000. But if you subscribe, which is not too expensive, you'll see like
map, graphic map interface like you used to with Zillow or Redfin or what have you, and you'll be able to drill down on locations and see available listings at any price.
Is this pretty up to date?
Yeah, they run updates every hour or so. And they
good. Yeah. And then it includes the small buildings that we're talking about. It's not just Arkea.
It definitely includes houses and condo units. As for small buildings, I'll have to ask them. I haven't checked with them for a while. I'm not sure if they've updated that. It's definitely going to get there at some point. Otherwise, if you want general statistics on, you know, how land value and property prices and transactions are doing in every location, Mitsui Fudosan publish annual statistics in English. If you just Google Mitsui Fudosan annual statistics, you'll find some pages in English with a lot of tables that you can browse through. And otherwise, the Bureau of Statistics has the population census that they update once every 5 years. I can send you some Excel sheets that we've downloaded from theirs. Last one was 2020, so hopefully 2026 we'll get the data up to 2025. And that'll give you an idea of what the population is doing in various locations. Otherwise, I don't know that many English resources, unfortunately.
Right. Okay, gotcha. Okay. All right. Okay. Let me run through my list of questions here. I think I've covered it all.
We'll have a lot more toing and froing once we're talking about particular properties, but the basics, we've probably covered most of it.
Right. So I think what I need to decide is, do I just go with, I'm leaning towards the small buildings. And then, so once we decided to go forward with this, I'll just email you and say, hey, we're ready, and then do we just sign a contract with you, right? And then, pay the fee, and then it goes from there.
Correct, yes. So the fee will be based on what we think your purchase budget is going to be, and then we'll credit or debit you after settlement, depending on the final purchase price.
Okay, and how much is your, how is your fee is being determined? Is it a percentage of the purchase price, is that right?
Yes, so if you're talking about buildings, which are definitely going to be more than 30 million yen, that's where our fee goes down to
3%. 3%, okay, gotcha.
Yeah. If you're talking about individual units or houses, which could be cheaper, it might be 4%.
Okay, got it, no problem. Okay, all right. And then on the first payment, is it a portion of it, is it the whole thing?
No, that's all payable in advance.
3%?
Yes.
The whole thing. Okay,
yes, so 3% of, let's say, the lower end of what you think your purchase budget would be, and that needs to be paid in advance, and then the rest of it will be credited or debited after settlement.
Yeah.
And I should caveat all of that just to say that we're a bit swamped and just moved office and hiring and training 5 new staffers, so we're not going to be able to do full facilitation before August or September. If you do want to start working or pull the trigger before that, I can put you in touch with a foreigner-friendly realtor who will be able to do the logistics of the purchase with you remotely in English like we would have done. They're still agents, so the kind of strategic conversations that we're having, they're not going to have with you, but then you can bring us on as consultants just to hold your hand for a few $100 and make sure you're not making any mistakes. So if you do want to act before August, September, we'll do that. And then we'll be just consulting to you while you work with that agent. Otherwise, we can do everything for you as discussed from August, September or so.
Oh, okay. So August or September. So if I want to fully engage you guys, I need to wait until August sometime.
Yes.
And then if I want to do it any sooner, I'll just email you. You'll send over the English-speaking agent.
Correct. So what we'll do is we'll have... because again, it's a foreigner-friendly agent and they're technologically savvy. They're not like a traditional old school Japanese agent. So we can set up a little WhatsApp chat group or a Line chat group and have the conversations with her there. And then I can jump in with feedback at any time. It makes things very smooth.
Okay. But then in that case, does an agent cover like all these different areas?
Yes, they can work all over Japan. Yes.
Oh.
Yeah. It'll probably end up being cheaper than hiring us for full facilitation. Because the agent's fee is already included in normal so that 15% that we talked about, that already includes a realtor fee.
Right.
So it would be cheaper because we're just going to charge a few $100 for the consultation. But in some cases, the listing agent are going to be a bit greedy and they're not going to want to share their commission with a buyer side agent, in which case you might have to pay her something like 3% like you would have paid us. In Japan, there's a listing agent who's appointed by the seller to sell the property, and then there's going to be a buyer's agent who's going to be bringing potential buyers. The seller agent charges the seller, the buyer agent charges the buyer. In some cases, the seller agent already sources the buyers by themselves, in which case they get to charge both sides. And some of them are a bit greedy in the sense that they only want it this way. They don't want to have a buyer side agent involved. But if that's the case, then you can just reach an agreement with the buyer side agent and pay them separately, like a facilitation fee or something, around the same amount.
Because
the seller side agents are going to be very traditional Japanese agents that are not going to be able to work with foreigners. So we have to have somebody like us or a buyer side agent involved. That sounds good. And we'll have a lot more once we send you actual samples of potential deals. We can put in a couple of hours of free research just to give you an idea of what's out there.
Okay.
So once we send you those, I'm sure we'll have a lot more exchanges about what's attractive about this property. Why are you not recommending that one? There'll be a lot more toing and froing then. Yeah, for sure. So if you I'm going to jump in another meeting in a minute. So if you could just reply to our last email with a reminder for me to give you a couple of potential research, a couple of hours, then we'll do that for you.
Yep. Okay.
All right.
Sounds good. We do.
Awesome. Talk to you soon.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
All right. Have a great one.
You too.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. So there you have it. Two nice informational, I hope, chats on the topic of real estate investment here in Japan. How it all works, how do we work, and what are some of the things that you should be looking out for in case you are planning to invest here. I hope you found some value in this episode, as always. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa, and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company, and you've got any sort of business or visa-related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com. And he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks, and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes Store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time, and until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku!